Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
Damien O'Mara, good to see you and good morning to
you. How are you?
Okay, we asked you to come in to talk to us this morning because of this news that the Tour de France... How would you characterize Lance Armstrong's relationship with the Tour de France since the doping scandal?
He is probably the darkest chapter in quite a gloomy history.
Yeah,
that'd be a fair way.
That's
of
a very fair
it.
Way of. Now I watched that documentary last summer. I don't know which one. There were two that seemed to be very similar. There was the one that featured David Walsh and Paul Kimmage, among others. And I thought it was about 55,000 times better than the Senna documentary that everyone kept going on about. I thought it was much more intriguing. It had much more drama. It was much more like a Shakespearean tragedy. It was much more interesting story. This guy is fascinating for all the wrong reasons.
And even still, the background to this, he is back in France today. He flew in from Austin last night. It's stage 12 of the tour today, but there are a number of charity endeavours. Apparently, if you go anywhere near the Tour de France, you can't get near it for cyclists that either cycle the tour in advance or follow the tour. So, for example, the Ross, which goes around, the Jan Pols Ross goes around Ireland every year. There's a thing called Race the Ross. So you can race the same stage for charity on the same day as the cyclists.
Okay.
So what Armstrong is taking part in is called One Day Ahead. So 24 hours in advance of each stage, 20 cyclists organised by a former professional footballer are cycling the tour stage to raise £1 million for an organisation called Cure Leukemia. So Geoff Thomas is the footballer, was diagnosed with leukemia in 2003, reached out to Armstrong. Armstrong was his hero. Armstrong had obviously battled cancer and had recovered. They've struck up a relationship and the guy thought, what better way to promote my charity and my endeavour than invite Lance? So Lance got on his plane last night, landed in France, and straight away was doorstopped by the media. So he will completely dominate all the coverage of the Tour de France
today.
Okay,
now, for people who didn't follow the Armstrong story, can you give us a sort of a snapshot of what he did that made him such a baddie in the cycling world?
One Tour de France is from 1999 to 2005, retired in 2005, rode a similar charity cycle in 2006, then came out of retirement having battled cancer and was a greater cyclist than he had ever been before. So seven tours all in. Time and time again, people will be familiar with David Walsh and Paul Kimmage and other journalists, the work they had done in trying to compare his times at the latter stages of his career when he should be, like, you just normally, you know, your body starts to slow down, where he was faster in his declining years than he ever was at what should have been his height.
So, and if I may interject there for a second, I always felt that both David Walsh and Paul Kimmage have been underestimated in the world of journalism, particularly Irish journalism, for the cojones they showed and for the tenacity that they showed in chasing a guy who was considered to be on Mount Olympus.
And a guy who had massive, massive wealth, who could just destroy you in court.
Or dismiss you at these press conferences with the way that it said to you, how dare you?
Which, like, for example, Paul Kimmage, people will be very familiar with. You know, Kimmage challenged him at a press conference one day, and because, you know, I think Paul had used a line about the cancer has returned to the sport, and Lance Armstrong in front of a room full of journalists, you know, you're not worth the chair that you're sitting on.
Yes.
And, you know, it's natural. We all fall somewhat in love with icons within the sport.
Yeah,
everyone wants to be everyone's friend. Everyone wants to be the guy who's going to get the interviews with Lance Armstrong. And he was glorified by the vast amount of cycling's media.
Yeah.
I won't say everybody, but the vast amount. So yeah, David and Paul did the work, uncovered it. You know, David in particular, very scientific, very analytical in how he broke it down.
Yeah.
So Armstrong, it subsequently emerged, USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency, basically said that he was the man that was at the forefront of the greatest orchestrated doping that sport had ever seen. So USADA, they published what was called a reasoned decision, which basically ruled that he had, over the course of his career, doped. Then people might remember the very famous interview he did with Oprah Winfrey, where basically I think Oprah asked him 8 or 9 questions, yes or no answers. Did you dope? Yes. Did you use EPO? Yes. Did you use it for each of your Tour de France successes? Yes. So he was stripped of his titles. If you look through the history books of the tour, there are no winners for the 7 races that Lance Armstrong...
They don't give the second place to... No.
There's too many question marks around too many people.
Is that right?
Yeah. And simply, I think if you go back through the history of the tour, I don't want to start listing off years, but you can go back from the Armstrong era back almost the whole way to, you know, quite a considerable amount of time, there are question marks over various Tour de France winners. Mm. Now, there are some that there are no doubts about, but there are too many question marks, and too many people who had either won the race or had finished second, third in the race have subsequently been found to have been dopers. So basically, when he was stripped of his titles, it's like it's like it's the asterisk is alongside it. There was no winner.
Yeah.
So
well, I was shocked because I remember being in London around the time of the Olympics and to an extent the Tour de France that Bradley Wiggins, who was clean as a whistle, as we know, won. But I was shocked because even as an armchair observer of the sporting world, he hadn't figured on the radar, and suddenly he was winning not only the Tour de France but also the Olympic gold, kind of slightly left of field, but delighted for him, and as I say, found to be innocent, and seems like an interesting guy.
And the difference with Wiggins is that, like, for example, we might talk about Chris Froome in a second, Froome has this phenomenal lead already, stage 12, he leads 2 minutes and 52 seconds. Wiggins had a slightly different approach, and like Mark Cavendish is another guy who's had a slightly different approach, that if you even try to bring up the issue with them in interviews subsequently, Wiggins would go on the attack, whereas Armstrong just kind of dismissed it. I've never failed a test, prove it, whatever, more arrogant about it. But where particular focus is going to fall on this is that Armstrong has been tweeting like bejiminey over the last couple of days. There's an awful lot of questions being asked of Chris Froome. So Froome carried a 12 second lead into stage 10, absolutely dominated the field, blew them away in the Pyrenees to win a stage, built up a 2 minute and 40 second advantage. So he now leads by 2 minutes 52. Team Sky, who he rides for, the biggest team in the sport at the moment, have accused people of hacking into their computer systems to try and get information on Froome. Froome has said he will go and have independent physiological exams after the tour to prove that he's clean. Someone tweeted Armstrong earlier this week to say, what do you make of this? Because one of the areas that people raised questions about Armstrong was that he could nearly be dead on one stage, and then the next day in the mountains, he would blow the rest of the field apart. So Froome has had to endure this scrutiny. Again, it's important to point out that Froome has never been...
Exactly.
Never.
But it's legacy stuff. I mean, exactly. Armstrong has... He sullied the waters for everyone, he wasn't the only one, but let's face it, he was the one that was winning time and time again, the yellow jersey
herein lies the controversy this year. And he is... I know there's a clip, I don't know if you want to play it. He's over here, he's engaging in the charity, an awful lot of controversy, particularly within the cycling fraternity. So he landed yesterday, he was doorstopped by Sky, and here is his reaction to controversy of his arrival.
I don't have mixed emotions. I mean, I'm sure that others do, and I understand that. I mean, I understand that there are mixed and difficult emotions for a lot of people. But I'm here for Jeff and for his cause, and he asked me to do it, and he flew to Austin to talk to me about it and look me in the eyes and just ask me to come. And so I'm honored that he asked, and I'm honored to help.
But the issue here now is that cycling will tell you that it has moved on, and Pat McQuaid was succeeded by Brian Cookson. Cookson claims that they've done great work to clean up the sport. The evidence is that we haven't had anywhere close to the scandal since the Armstrong era that we had then. But herein, the sport has moved on. The sport has cleaned itself up, we are told. And the greatest cheat in the sport's history rolls back into town. So all the talk today will be about this. Even, I was reading some of the articles about it in advance, and obviously the British media have picked up on it in particular because Chris Froome is leading. The guy who's organised this is a former English international footballer. Yeah. Nowhere in the copy does it make reference to the fact that there's a specific organisation that they're raising money for. So,
I think it's taking away from everything. The good of the actual race and the fans who love cycling. Your man's cause, to an extent, it actually might be, they say all publicity is good publicity, which is not true.
I don't think so. No.
Absolutely not. But then you've got this massive personality, and there's something that suggests extraordinary arrogance to come in and say, it's like the guy who made bags of things and came back to say, what? Like,
and in a separate clip yesterday, he was asked about Froome and people making allegations or making suggestions or innuendos about his performance. And he was like, well, I don't know. We've moved on. I'm not qualified to comment on what happens now. But he has got unbelievably media friendly, more so now than he ever was when he was cycling. So he did what he was obliged to do when he was cycling. I'm told if you can get his number, you can just ring him up now and he'll do whatever you want him to do. So he will do press over the next 2 days. Yeah. There will be as many journalists will follow Armstrong as will follow the proper race.
Yeah. Well, so we love a villain too, don't we? But we're fascinated by villains.
The other thing as well is, I remember, how many people queue up to get selfies with, say, Katie Hopkins or whatever, your woman who's on your mate off the Late Late Show.
The controversialist.
Exactly. Yes. And you will see the same thing here. People will queue up to get their picture taken with Armstrong. Twitter today will be a bomb with, selfies with Armstrong. That the story will once again become doping. Now, there's another counter argument. The guy has sinned. He has admitted that he's sinned. Does he have the right to move on with his life?
That's the question. Is that a rhetorical question? Or well,
I don't really.
It's not my place to judge him.
Well, no, and nor is it mine. And yeah. I'm kind of slightly conflicted on it. Because right. if they can come in, I don't know what money is he donating money? See, this is another area that has always been very uncomfortable to deal with. The night after USADA's recent decision, we were lucky enough to get Lance Armstrong's personal attorney to come on to a programme on Radio 1. Yeah. So we approached this with, let's throw the mics open. If we do half an hour, we do half an hour, whatever. And at one point in the conversation, Sean Breen was the attorney's name, brought up the issue that you need to look at what good this man has done. And for all that he has sinned in cycling, if he has sinned, he has used his profile to help cancer charities. So the Live Strong Foundation, all the work that he has done for cancer. Mm. So it's a delicate situation to deal with, and it's a difficult situation to tackle, that if he is using his profile for good, should he be condemned for it?
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's not for you or I to say that. That's for an individual decision for everyone to make.
Well, it's a moral conundrum, isn't it, in some ways?
I can guarantee you there will be talk today of a charity cycle. You will not hear talk of what it is they're raising money for or, you know, the fact that there are 20 people have raised £1 million between them to try and get on this tour. So
we will watch with enormous... What stage is the Tour de France at the moment?
Stage 12 today.
Stage 12.
Irish are going well. Yeah. Dan Martin narrowly missed out on a stage win on Saturday.
Yes, yeah,
finished
that.
Second again yesterday.
He's nearly there.
He's, I think, 16th overall. Nicholas Roach is mid-50s. Sam Bennett, young Irish cyclist, is well down the field, but he's getting exposed to the tour. Froome, the cycling experts will say, has an insurmountable lead unless he gets a puncture or his wheel falls off his
bike. British win on the cards.
Well, you see, it's Team Sky. Like, Sky have just completely redesigned how teams approach cycling. Now, again, they're not without controversy. They've hired a former employee of Armstrong's in the last couple of days. They've had to endure unbelievable scrutiny and focus. But, you know, to interview cyclists, like David Walsh wrote a very good book about Team Sky where he was embedded with them for the Tour de France. And, you know, promoters of Sky will say they've just completely restructured how you approach cycling and pro cycling, and that's why they're so dominant. So,
Damien, I was in a coffee shop in Skerries last week with my friend. Paul Kimmage came in for a coffee and he sat outside minding his own business. I came home and told my husband I'd seen him, and he asked me, did I not congratulate him? I said I would have been too embarrassed, but I'm sorry I didn't. I don't think people understand what a Lance Armstrong put that man through. He's a true journalist. And I'm kind of on that. That's my take on
To the best of my knowledge, is still undergoing, not with Armstrong, but with Hein Verbruggen and with the UCI, that Paul is still in the middle of legal battles over articles and stuff that was said over the years.
I think there's
ongoing
issues. I agree on the good Lance has done, says another text. He was the fall guy for an entire sport. But he pushed himself.
But you see, okay, fell. It's like, I think the Cranberries, their debut album was Everyone Else Is Doing It, So Why Shouldn't We, or Why Can't We, or whatever. Yeah. Does that make it right? Like, no. if everyone is doping, or if everyone at the top end of the sport was doing it, okay, he was doing what everyone else was doing. But that USADA report, if you read it, and if you read not just David Walsh, there's a American journalist, Juliet McCurr, I think is her name, writes for the New York Times, wrote a phenomenal book about him as well, where they documented that, okay, there might have been 10 guys at the top end of pro cycling were doing it, but this guy was the ringleader, this guy was the instigator, this guy was the guy who ruled with an iron fist. And if you went against Armstrong, you were not welcome in pro cycling. So,
a fellow passenger.
I can understand that point, but if everyone else was at 75%, Armstrong was at 100% in terms of power and manipulation.
All right, Damon, thanks for that. Much obliged, and enjoyed that wander through the crazy, curious world of Lance Armstrong. Thanks a million.
No problem.